Well, it's barely a month ago that we had the BizNews conference in Hermanus. One of our keynote speakers, Moletsi Mbeki, had a lot of interesting things to say. Subsequent to that, I see he followed up on a conversation with Sizwe Mpofu Walsh, which has really caught the imagination of the public. BEE at the center of it. Now we've got Donald Trump to contend with as well, and the Trump tariffs. We'll find out from Moletsi a little update on his thinking. Moletsi, lovely talking with you. Perhaps, I suppose, there's only really one place to start, and that is the Donald Trump tariffs. Clearly, from the conversations that I've had with people in the United States, people close to the government as well over there, there is a back channel that's happening. They say that they're very unhappy at a lot of the way things are being structured in South Africa, and black economic empowerment, or the way that it's implemented at the moment, is one of the red flags. Now, there's a heck of a lot going on with Trump and tariffs and everything else, but you did wave that flag, or have been waving that flag, for quite some time and getting some criticism from it. Maybe before we go into more discussions, can you just in a nutshell give us your concerns with the way that BEE is structured at the moment?
Well, you know, I have been opposing black economic empowerment way back at the beginning of the whole process. If you remember, Alec, black economic empowerment started somewhere around 1991-92, and it was triggered by the transfer of what were called high voting shares from a subsidiary of Sanlam called Metropolitan Life. There was a black company called New Africa Investments Limited, which was led by the late Dr. Motlana, and the president, our current president, was one of its shareholders. Now, these guys, there were about six of them, were loaned money by the Industrial Development Corporation, IDC, to buy 10% of the shareholding in Metropolitan Life. They didn't actually have to provide any security to IDC because Metropolitan Life underwrote the debt that they incurred. So it was literally a gift for them to buy these shares. Now, my objection was that after over 100 years of job reservation, the challenge that black South Africa faced was to promote entrepreneurship. And to me, that was the most important challenge that we faced, not to enrich politicians from the liberation struggle. Black economic empowerment does not promote entrepreneurship. If anything, it disincentivizes entrepreneurship because it gives people shareholding in existing companies, 26% or whatever it is. Since they don't have the capital, the company has to finance them. So it really is a system of buying favors from black politicians. And that is the second problem with black economic empowerment. In the process of buying favors from black politicians, you then create an environment for corruption because then anything goes in that situation. So first, black economic empowerment disincentivizes entrepreneurship, which we desperately need in South Africa. I mean, if we are realistic, most entrepreneurs in South Africa are either white or Indian. So we need to get the African and the colored into entrepreneurship. So that is a very important part of developing the economy of the country and tackling problems of unemployment and poverty. Is true entrepreneurship, not through enriching a coterie of politicians. So that is really been my objection. I was interested that Donald Trump is interested in our black economic empowerment policies. As it happens, I have been opposing them since 1991-92.
It's an extraordinary thing that you've now laid out the uber truth. You always have been talking about these, but whatever resistance, whatever objections there have been to this capturing of black people by the business establishment has been shot down, subverted, not discussed, not allowed to be spoken in open conversation. And now we sit with a situation of a country that, exactly as you say, where entrepreneurship amongst the majority of the people is restricted to the informal sector. It just doesn't seem right. But Moletsi, there's so many powerful interests that are benefiting from this system. The IRR says 150 billion rand a year that they know of that is legally allowed to be given to the beneficiaries. That to reverse it all, to fix the mistakes that were made in the early 90s, 30, 25 years ago, is going to take something. Is this stuff that Trump is up to at the moment going to help or hinder that process?
Well, I don't know what Trump's strategy is about, what he is going to do about his opposition to black economic empowerment in South Africa. So I can't say what his own action is going to be. But for us as South Africans, black economic empowerment is a liability. It's not an asset to the people of South Africa. And we have to find a way of getting rid of it. Of course, you are right that there are powerful interests that benefit from this undermining of economic development in South Africa. But then the French, there was a lady, when the French people said they can't find bread, she told them that they must eat cake. So the beneficiaries of black economic empowerment, I am sure, will end up the same way.
Marie Antoinette, deranged, when you're so far away from the normal or the ordinary people. But Moletsi, just to go a little bit deeper, we now have the business community saying to the DA, stay in the government of national unity, also trying to say the same thing to the president, but Cyril Ramaphosa has told them to take a hike. This does appear to be a overreach, perhaps, from the business community, given that it was the business community that has left us with BEE, which is, if you like, first principles, where it all we started going wrong by the way that you view things.
Well, my own view, when I listened to President Ramaphosa responding to the business letter, I think he totally overreacted. There was no suggestion of dictation in the letter. In fact, the letter uses the word that it pleads with the leaders of the ANC and the president of South Africa not to break up the government of national unity. So Ramaphosa, I think he was playing to some gallery of sorts when he then stood up in front of the cameras and saying he will not accept dictation from business. There was no dictation from business. It was actually a plea with him, for him and John Steenhuisen, not to break up the government of national unity. So I think there's a lot of posturing in what we are seeing, especially from the ANC leaders about the government of national unity. They are trying to tell the voters, who are incidentally are rejecting them, they are trying to tell the voters that they are tough guys and the voters should continue voting for them. I don't think it washes. That's why the ANC is at 40%, and the latest opinion survey shows it as being down to 32% if there were an election held today. So it's fully no one playing to this gallery of being tough guys and accusing business of dictating when it very clearly was pleading with them.
But it's still, you have to lay the sin of BEE at someone's door, and the ones who engineered it might have been the business back in the early 1990s, but certainly it was the business executives who gave shareholders equity across to those that they favored at the time and thus entrenched something which is very, very difficult to reverse. And I guess there's your Gordian knot. How do you untie it?
Well, you know, Alec, we've had many Gordian knots in this country. And they have been untied. So I'm not worried. The people who benefit from black economic empowerment know that it is not contributing to the development of the country. It is actually contributing to driving corruption in the country, and it is contributing with front companies and all those kinds of things. And it is contributing to disincentivizing entrepreneurship. Remember, we are not at the end of history. Remember, there was a famous American professor, when the Cold War ended, he said this was the end of history. We thought when apartheid ended, it was the end of history. Well, as the ANC is discovering, it's not the end of history.
Francis Fukuyama, you certainly are throwing out some interesting insights for us today. Well, let's see. So what next? We have this... You said to Sizwe on his SMWX show that it's not South Africa versus America, it's more Republicans versus ANC at the moment. Do you want to just unpack that for us?
Well, you know, the ANC, if you remember, went into exile in 1960 after the Sharpeville massacre. And it had two missions. Oliver Tambo was then leader of the ANC, was assigned two missions. One mission was to get the international community to boycott South African goods in order to pressurize the apartheid regime to go to the negotiating table for a new constitution. The second assignment was the ANC decided to set up an armed wing, was to find training facilities and countries that will arm and train the ANC's military wing. So that was the assignment. Now, in the case of the United States, South Africa, the anti-apartheid struggle had a very powerful family, which were the Kennedys, who were very strong supporters of the anti-apartheid movement. In fact, I think President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, was the first one to impose sanctions on South Africa after the Sharpeville massacres. I think he put an arms embargo, if I'm not mistaken, on South Africa. So the United States also opened up for South African students who were in exile. And later, even those who were not in exile, there was a scholarship program which was started in the 1980s promoted by a congressman, a Democratic congressman called Stephen Solas, a scholarship program to bring students from inside the country. So they pressurized the regime to give the students passports to go and study in the United States. And if I'm not mistaken, we had 3,000 students under the Solas program who went to study in the United States in the 1980s and early 1990s. So that was one side. The other side was, of course, the sanctions side. So the Kennedys and the Democrats pushed for sanctions, but President Reagan opposed sanctions. Him and his right-hand man on Africa, a man called Chester Crocker, they opposed sanctions, and they vetoed the resolution on sanctions that was tabled by the Democrats. So the sanctions movement had to persuade the Republicans to join them in order to override President Reagan's veto. And the Republicans did exactly that. They joined, and the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act was passed over President Reagan's veto. Now, I don't think the ANC, after it got sanctions from the United States, made any effort to build up its relations with the Republican Party. And I think that's one of the problems. So it never explained the armed struggle. It never explained its relationship with the Soviet Union, which was Annum Controversies. It never explained its relationship with Cuba. And it just took an antagonistic view when these issues were raised. And obviously, this has been building up over many years. And now it's burst. It's like a boil that has been there building up, and now the boil is burst, and this is what we're now sitting with. I don't think if the ANC had made the effort to keep relations with the Republicans, I don't think we would have come to this stage.
It's a beautiful dilemma that we faced within South Africa, but we do have humility sometimes. And surely there's a great deal of humility that's required on both sides of the ocean right now. We're very small in the American lives. What would you be advising the South African government to do right now, given that even getting an audience with Donald Trump and his closest would be very difficult?
Well, you know, the experts on American politics tell us that Donald Trump is a transactional person. He wants he wants something for what he's giving. So the Americans have been giving us AGOA, and that's one-way traffic. It's them giving us. And as I pointed out, in the 1980s and early 90s, they gave us scholarships for our students. And they gave us sanctions against the apartheid regime. So the Americans have been giving and giving and giving to South Africa. Now that we are a normal democratic country, we have to have reciprocal relationships where we also give. The question is that what is it that we have that Donald Trump and the administration value about South Africa? And that's what we should be discussing with them.
So it's really that simple, that one has a look at what can we give them so that they will be able to give us back, get rid of these awful tariffs. I had a mail this morning from the Citrus Growers Association of South Africa, and they are really worried because the citrus is on its way to the United States, and it will be priced out of the market if tomorrow those tariffs are implemented, and then all the citrus would come back, and that's going to have a big impact on 20,000 jobs and the town of Citrus Dull, which has focused its attention on the United States. Who knows what's going to happen there? So there are some immediate practical implications, and I guess we haven't been too good at urgently addressing things. Would that be part of the recommendation as well, that the government, and if it's a government of national unity, gets together quickly, boxes clever, as Helen Ziller told us yesterday, and actually gets something on the table quickly before the country starts losing jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. The two main parties at the end of the day, I mean, they are the people that matter in the government of national unity. They have to sit down and look at what is it that the Americans are interested in about South Africa, which they would like to get from South Africa. And then to sound out, you know, through the various channels, whether they are in the right directions, you know. The good thing about the United States is that it has think tanks like the Center for International and Strategic Studies, which have a lot of access to government, to the government of the United States. They should go and see these think tanks and say to them, look, what is it that this guy wants? What can we give him that he would consider to be valuable? So as I say, there are these think tanks, there are the Council on Foreign Relations, the Hudson Institute. These are all the think tanks in the United States that our diplomats should be going to and discussing with them, and delegates and people from the government of national unity, two or three people, should be talking to these people. What is it that the Americans would want in exchange for continuing the duty-free entrance of South African product? And on top of that, we have over 600 American companies in South Africa. They should go and see these companies and say, look, guys, what does this man want? What can we offer this guy? But you know, as you know, our government is very inept, I'm afraid. And they are inept. And instead of getting on their bicycle and going around, going to see these think tanks, we have think tanks in South Africa as well. I'm chairman of the South African Institute of International Affairs. That's one of the oldest think tanks in this country on international issues. We have the Institute for Global Dialogue. I haven't seen these guys from the government of national unity going to these experts. We have powerful teams of researchers in these institutes who can advise them. So I think one of our big problems is actually we have a very inept government, and that I don't know what the solution is to that, but that is one of the big problems. That's why it takes so long to find solution to problems.
Well, let's just hope that Pretoria, and I know they do watch BizNews TV, and the people in the union buildings watch this and say, ah, here's a solution. Because certainly from the back channels that I have access to, there is a desire to fix this. $400 million that did just wiped out of our through the PEPFAR withdrawal of the funding there has hurt. And it's money that this government doesn't have and is finding very difficult to get. Imagine if that PEPFAR money hadn't gone, well, maybe we wouldn't have had to increase VAT by half a percentage point, just as a starting point. But Moletsi, if you look forward, is there any sign of hope, any ray of hope that you can pass on to the BizNews tribe?
Well, I think there's a lot of hope. I was very encouraged by the letter by the business community to the two leaders, nudging them on to settle their differences and put the interests of the country first. When all is said and done, business is the most trusted institution in South Africa by South Africans. It's far more trusted than the government of South Africa. The population trusts business far more than it trusts government. So I'm encouraged that business is using this trust from the population to nudge the politicians to do the right thing. Cyril became hysterical. They shouldn't be deterred by it. They should press ahead and keep talking to get the government of national unity to become more proactive, to go and see these think tanks, to talk to the American companies in South Africa. And to find solutions. So I'm encouraged.
Moletsi Mbeki, political analyst, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.